for long periods in deep retreat. And here we believe that that's an absolute necessity. And there'll be those who will disagree with us. There'll be those who say that you don't even have to sit. But certainly, this was not the case of my teacher. He sat all of his life. Certainly, it was not the case of his teachers, Yasutani and Kori Roshi, or their teachers right on through the great Dogen Zenji, who says that it comes down through this sitting form. Now, here we also know that true Zazen, see, and how many people know what true Zazen is, has nothing whatsoever to do with the four positions. Now, the question comes to mind, and I'm going to try not to use names, and the first one I'll try not to use is Michael. But Thursday night, I actually had brought, I came in to talk and almost specifically to some of the experiences you're having with your practice. And one of the things that I had wanted to say, and those of you who were here Thursday night know that I did touch on this. See, depending upon your aspiration, if you want to use this as sort of a New Age exercise, in lowering the your heart rate, you know, a little bit more mental stability, just generally feeling better, sleeping better, dealing with your day-to-day kind of problems, you know, on a more balanced, whatever that thing is in the bottom of a house, what do they call it, foundation. See, if you want that, it will deliver this. Oh, there's no doubt about it. And there are, and you can pick up the book, The Three Pillars of Zen, if you want to find these different levels of how you can approach the practice. But if you have a deep aspiration, I will guarantee you, you're going to have difficulties in the practice. And the deeper the aspiration, in some sense, the more profound and the deeper the difficulty. And I'm always a little surprised that we don't get that. See? Because what we're dealing with here is the egocentric self. See? And the ego, as every one of us knows from intimate experience, the moment you are slighted, what do you experience? You experience discomfort. A great deal of discomfort. And sometimes that discomfort results in anger. And anger. I want to get even with somebody. I want to push it back at them. They have really hurt me. So as we begin to dismantle, see, this constructed self that keeps us trapped in a very narrow, very limited world, this is the conditioned world that we sit in right here now. And if I'm going to knock over these walls, these psychological walls that keep me trapped, I'm going to experience absolute suffering in this, absolute discomfort, absolute dismay. And am I going to feel that, oh my God, I can never do it? Or am I going to slip into nihilism because you mean it's just me? Yes, yes. And if you experience that question at a deep, powerful level, it hurts, it's painful, and it thrashes about. See, it doesn't want to relinquish ownership. It's the master. And why does it want to become subservient? It does not just drop away without a struggle. So the fact that you reach that point where it looks somewhat grim, where you experience, when I mentioned to you the other day, a despair that I felt, absolute despair. See, oh, my God, you have to go through that doorway. That's what it means to be on the path. See, the teacher's job, partly, is to push you into those situations where you have an opportunity to see this grasping nature, to understand how it functions, and then to find the pathway out, the pathway to liberation. This is the path of the Buddha. If you reach that point, and realize not everyone reaches that point, because the majority of people don't have the aspiration for that experience. See, so if we reach these difficult times, and once I remember talking this about Roshi, and he was telling me, he said, Nyogen, at that point, he said, that's where the karma, the karmic connection with the teacher and the student is so important. He says, because that there will be times when all of your senses will scream, no, no, not that way. And you go forward simply because you have a profound faith that your teacher is there working for you. Now, I was very lucky, and I have been down so low so many times, not just in terms of the relationship with the teacher, because if the teacher is truly connected to the student, if the teacher is truly concerned, there are some who feel indifference. Mazumi Roshi was never that way. See. But I can almost say that if there is love for that student, the teacher will push the student. And don't think for a moment it doesn't hurt for the teacher to watch the student thrash about. They'll talk about it in koans, the introductions. They'll talk about it. See, teachers in despair too. And they'll say that the teacher will go down into that muddy water with the student. And how many times must Mazumi Roshi have gone down with me? See, and as I've told all of you, this is the absolute truth. His last doksan he gave to me, and it was a killing doksan. Went right after me. See, but at that time, see, I was okay. And then he asked me to forgive him. And then he followed me out onto the path in the mountains, and it was a snowstorm. We were rushing to get down. And he followed me in the storm. He called me, Nyogen, Nyogen, and I turned around. And here he is, little sweatpants, you know, and he had such little legs, see? And he had this funny hat that he'd wear. And his head sort of turned to the side, and he says, Nyogen, do you really forgive me? And I said, yes. My jaws sort of clenched, see, because I'd taken a thrashing there. But I also recognized that it was different. I also recognized, and I had mentioned that to him, Roshi, it's okay now. I've covered the ground where I stand. But that's the last image I have of my teacher, asking me to forgive him. From his death on, almost daily, I ask him to forgive me. See, I now have so much more of a profound appreciation for what he was, what he represented in my life, and recognition that where I sit as I am today, doesn't matter how it appears. The karmic lenses that you all have in your head, that's your karma. But where I sit today, I am in debt forever to this teacher. And that brings me to what I actually wanted to talk about today. I get jabbering. How do we make this practice so that we can actualize it? For those of deep aspiration, actualizing is the important thing. How do I make this practice come alive in my moment-to-moment existence? If it's not doing that, if it is not transforming your life, see, and this is where the miracle occurs. See, it isn't growing wings or popping out the top of your head. See, the miracle that takes us as we are, with all of the karmic garbage dripping, oozing from us, our insensitivity, it takes us, it takes that, and transforms it. What an amazing miracle that is. Do you realize, when you fall into a despair saying, oh my God, you mean it's just me? That's the backward step. That has to be taken. And if you don't get it, if you don't see it, if you don't experience, you will forever miss this Dharma. And you can still sit, zazen, and it will help you. It will bring some mental, some emotional stability. It can help, I think, I'm convinced, you'll be healthier. You'll learn how to be more pleasant. You'll be more tolerant at work and at home. But you still will be trapped in the folds of delusion. And when somebody draws that fingernail along the white belly of your ego, you will bleed and you will splash it all over every place. That's the realm of delusion. That's the realm of suffering. But we don't have to stay trapped in that and to simply say that this Buddha Dharma is my ordinary life misses it. My Zumi Roshi, I've told, and the new ones have never heard this, but you'll hear this said time and time again, and it's not a totally inaccurate statement. And maybe I can touch on that today when I get through this. He said, see, to say that it's just my life, you mean my day-to-day existence? See, well, yes and no. Maizumi Roshi, after one person that he had allowed to give a talk, had made that comment, Maizumi said to me, what's wrong with that person? Do they think that a Buddha sat the way a Buddha sat to simply say, my worm-like existence is it? No. They are caught in the material world. They have taken the finger pointing, see, and said, oh, well, this is it. Now I don't need to practice. I don't need to do that crazy zazen. Let me give a quote. See, the great such and such, Abhasa, don't need to practice. But read him. Don't take it out of context. Read what he says in its entirety. Zazen here in the hazy moon, for those of you with serious aspiration, means no separation. Zazen itself has nothing whatsoever to do with sitting on a cushion, standing up, lying down, or walking around. Zazen means no separation. Now let's see how we can bring that to apply. If you want this practice to work, if you want it to come alive, if you want it to transform yourself, listen, these old masters aren't exaggerating. They're not trying to get you to join a health club. They're not trying to sell you some books. They're trying to tell you about a living experience. See? And it's not away from you. But you have to begin this practice, see, with right faith. This is the bedrock, see, that we begin to build on. Right faith. Maybe it was Roshi told me at one point, I've heard this from someone, that it was discussed, maybe scholars or somebody were discussing, and see whether or not Zen constituted Zen Buddhism a religion. See, I think it could also be said of Dzogchen and some of the others. Dzogchen themselves will step themselves out of that particular category. See, but they decided that it was, see, and I think this is true, I have no problem with the word religion, that it's true because of faith. See, that there is faith in this practice. But right faith. See, this is the important thing. Right faith, not conditioned faith, not faith that there is something outside of me that can save me. Never going to happen. See, faith in what? See, faith that your intrinsic Buddha nature is there functioning right now. See, it isn't underdeveloped. It isn't away from you. It's not inadequate. That what you are in the very essence of your being is this Buddha nature. And this Buddha nature cannot be defined. It has no boundaries. See, it is infinite like space. It fills up the entire universe and can be found in the smallest particle. It is stable. It is peaceful. It was never born and it will never die. Faith that is there now inherent in you, functioning perfectly. The problem is that we're neurotic. We are caught in the crazy delusional sight. Who do I cite as reference for this? The Buddha himself. He said the only difference between a Buddha, an ascension being in delusion, is upside down thinking. Isn't that amazing? Now, for those of you who have doubt, and when we hit that wall, see, you have to bring up this faith that it's here, functioning perfectly here, now. And remember, simply because it can't be defined, that you can't put limits on it. Don't think that this means non-existence. This true self, this Buddha nature, this face before your parents were born, this Muji, brings forth all things. It is not a non-existent state. It is not a state, though, that you can see. You can only be it. And then we can say, to see this state. If you get caught in your material world, if you get caught, see, in taking this as an absolute reality, you're mistaking the great ocean and the waves. It's true. The wave is identical in its essence to the ocean. Do you see that? But a wave is conditioned. Wind, bottom, gives rise to direction and duration. It is conditioned. It comes into existence. The wave itself is identical to the ocean, but it's not the ocean. The wave is so, so limited. The great ocean has no limitation. The waves come out of the grave ocean. You are the wave. Conditioned. Where you are, how you are, is your karma. See, whether or not we believe it. Certainly from the time of your birth to now, you don't argue with that. That your behavior gives rise to who you are, as you are, and where you are. And you should stop bitching and moaning about it. You should stop feeling hurt that you don't have your share. You don't have your share. You are a Buddha. More importantly, don't get caught by that name. You are creation itself occurring here and now. And the only reason we don't experience it is because we're clotted over. How many of you truly believe that this thing that you pursue so feverishly is functioning perfectly here and now, right where you are? More importantly, it is you, your true self. And what else can we say about this? How else can we, in a certain sense, define this? This true self, this Buddha nature, this eternal moment, it is pure awareness. It is not just a vacuum. It can paint great paintings, write great poetry. It appreciates good wine. It enjoys laughter, beautiful sunsets. This is what you are, and it is totally selfless. Not a shred of ego in it. It gives rise to the pure and the impure equally. And it falls to us in the limited self, in this egocentric, ruminating mind that grasps and rejects, to set up the suffering. See, so if we start, if you have the right faith, see, faith that my Buddha nature is here now. I didn't believe that when I started. I'm not sure that I heard that even. I censored out anything that could have been helpful. I was so totally involved with my own convoluted thinking of how it is. And some of us here are the same thing. Sometimes for me, it's just amazing to sit and listen. And particularly when you come inside, see the Doksan room, come in, watch your practice. Oh, my practice is this, but, and in 15 minutes, describing the most unusual world. I'll try to suggest it. Watch your practice. Oh, I'm doing that. And then with all of this thing here, see? Just amazing. I don't know that I heard that my Buddha nature was perfectly formed, completely adequate, had been in existence from the beginningless beginning, and would never go into non-existence. And it's functioning right where Nyogen sat. I kept looking for it. I kept looking for it. I even on one occasion, in the despair, I thought, well, I'll go to India and get me a, in quote, real guru. See, a real teacher. Craziness, see. You're it. Have faith in that, see. Take that backward step. Understand that in the very essence of what you are, you're not going to lose anything by this practice except the neurotic side. And it's your neurotic side that causes you pain. That's what causes us to suffer. This grasping, I want something. See? It's mine. The moment that delusion sets up, and by the way, and I've said it and I'll say it again and again and again, see, this falls within the three poisons. Greed, anger, and ignorance. And this ignorance, see, this ignorance, this is the great delusion that I sit in separation from the environment around me. The point to Kensho is to cut through that flow of the grasping, rejecting mind, to cut through that egocentric mind, to stop the thought once and for all. You cannot do that by an act of will, because the act of will is activating that egocentric mind. See, so we devise gimmicks. And I'm comfortable saying that because that's how I was instructed by my teacher. These are gimmicks we use. See, bait and switch. We get our neurotic side to watch something here while we allow something else to come up here. And once that occurs, you will not slip back into that tumbling, turning, churning mind, that mind that sets you in opposition to every situation you experience every moment of the day. Oh yes, in our normal neurotic life, we will have moments of contentment, see? And then we normally will bombard our senses until we can't sense anymore. We'll drink, we'll dope, we'll hammer it with a sound, see, until we become numb. We're anesthetizing ourselves to life. The most amazing thing that we should be experiencing in all of its richness. And do you know what happens? If I stay trapped in this little tiny world, this little narrow egocentric world, life passes me by while I'm sitting there reading pictures off the back of my eyelid. How sad. See, how sad. But now, if you have right faith, and you don't worry about having to find some place or someone to save you, knowing that you have all of the tools that you need to take care of it for yourself, now what you have to have is the right discipline and courage, guts, see, to do it. It is not an easy thing to completely cut through this, but it should be. And you do understand one thing. You cannot avoid the true path. You cannot escape the true self. You cannot lose this mind only. You understand? Sufis have a wonderful, wonderful statement. See, you're not free until you realize that God knows all. Well, do you see why? The person you're trying to hide from is you. Isn't that an amazing thing? You're trying to hide from you. You can't do it. You've got to remember, you know it all. You know those little dark corners that you don't even share with your psychiatrist. They're there. What an amazing thing. Do you see how you can immediately begin to drop some of the burden that we carry? Forget Oh, my terrible. I've had people come in. And I felt this way myself, and probably we all do. Most people don't give, you know, voice to it. But I have people come in. And they say, Jürgen, you know, there is just this side of me. I want you to know there's a really ugly side to me. Isn't it amazing, see, that you don't have to confess to me. You don't have to confess at all. Because it's already known by this true self. It's already known by this Buddha nature. And you are not condemned. You are not damned. Then forget it. Don't get caught in the ruminating mind. Don't get caught in the past. How much of your time, those of you sitting here today, how much of your time has been spent ruminating about the past? Why are you pulling a shadow train? How amazing to step out into the bright, clear sunlight of the now. And don't you see? Don't you get it? You never leave the now. You don't have to worry about resolving the past. Drop it. Cut it. Simply wake up here and now. That's what we're doing. Now, it's easy to say that, but not so easy to do it. Those of you who are practicing here know. You simply have to apply yourself to it. Now, the interesting part. You can make this journey much, much easier. The realization, the insight into it, not so difficult. See, working on it day by day to where we actualize it, to where we actually live in this selfless world of oneness, this has to be real. If you make it up in your mind, if you make it up conceptually, you will exploit the situation. And we see that often. We see that with people who claim to be practicing the way. And watch how they take advantage. Watch how they stir it up. Watch how they constantly, constantly work for this egocentric self. That's not Dharma. If you can very simply cultivate this right faith, that should then allow you to sit with much more comfort. We sit. We practice not to bring up our Buddha nature. You don't sit to develop your Buddha nature. It's functioning here perfectly now. You sit because we're neurotic. Because we are, in fact, caught in the flow of egocentric rumination. We have to break that. We have to cut through that. And I was talking with, I don't know who it was, maybe I was talking with Larry, I don't remember, or John on this sheet. But our practice is very consistent with learning theory. See, we have some bad habits. And we perpetuate these bad habits by continuously ruminating on them, continuously thinking on them. This is how we reinforce them. Now, in learning theory, they say behavior that's reinforced is more likely to occur and reoccur than behavior that's not. So in this ruminating, grasping, rejecting mind, each moment it comes up, I think on it, I ponder it, I go to the past, I go to the future, I am continuously chewing, you're reinforcing it. See, stop that. Well, how do I do that, Jürgen? You cannot stop that with an act of will. So, now you have a practice. It's kind of beautiful, see? So every time that mind starts to activate, you pull it back to your breath. You pull it back to your koan. You don't develop the thought. Also, you don't raise critical mind. You don't say, oh, hell, I can't do it. You go back to it. It can be difficult. But the interesting thing, there are perks built into this practice all along the way. And then in a very, very short time, if you apply yourself, the breathing takes on dimensions that you didn't know were there. You can forget yourself in the breathing. You can use the breathing as a rich resource throughout your day-to-day activities. You can refresh yourself with it. See, allow it to settle low in the stomach, the hara. See, don't try to force it. Don't try to control it. Just be very attentive, very alert to it. Most amazing, see. And soon, the struggle with sitting and simply counting or following the breath will drop away. And you'll look back and think, why did I ever have trouble with that? This is quite remarkable. And you should use it moment to moment throughout the day. This is another important point in actualizing real practice. Don't walk into the temple, sit down on a cushion for an hour and a half, for 3 days, for 7 days, for 60 days. The whole system is designed, even to walking kinhin, to sustain your practice. How many of you truly sustain it? Or the moment you leave here, you forget it. The great teachers have all said what? If you will sustain it 24 hours a day. And did you hear? 24 hours a day? What's included in that 24 hours a day? You're sleeping. Sustain it. That's how profound and deep this practice has to be. But if you simply sit on the cushion, do zazen and leave, and over, I'll bet you all of us have been guilty of that. Well, you know, when I'm up there where I can practice, see, in my religion, but out here in the real world, this is the real world. This is the eternal now. Karma has produced what we're experiencing here now. Karma will produce what you continuously experience in this now that never changes. It is eternal, and it's pure awareness. To experience the reality of it. Now, apply this. Apply your breathing. See, if you're working on a koan when you have time, don't do it in your driving seat like this, although the breathing works quite nicely. But make sure that the koan becomes a living experience for you. It is not something to be understood conceptually. There are people, Roshi's told me this, you'll see people who go all the way through koan practice and will never have a koan come alive. If you have a koan actually turn, you will know it. And it will make a change, and it will make an immediate jump. So here in the Hazy Moon, we push on that. See? And if I find people starting to fall into patterns and going along, I'll allow that for a while. And then I will put a roadblock in the way. You have to experience the koan. See, becomes an expression of your life where you are as you are. How many times have some of you in advanced koan practice come in and said, you know, it's the damnedest thing. It seems like the life situation that I find myself in is always related to one of these koans that I'm working on. It always is so amazing to me. See, well, Roshi referred to koans when I started. He said, they're gimmicks, Nogin, but genius in conception. He said, I cannot conceive of what kind of a mind could develop this form of a practice. Be thorough in your practice. See, take it away with you. Your practice won't deprive you. It will enrich you. I guarantee it will enrich, it will enhance each and every activity. Anto has said to me, she has to work. She works longer hours than most of us here. See, much longer. And she has told me, although we're trying to get her here full time now, but she has told me that it's almost easier to practice in her workplace than it is here. Because the workplace tends to make her stay on her toes, tends to make her sort of appreciate what's going on. It continuously confronts her with the situation. Consequently, her practice unfolds beautifully. Your practice has to work in the marketplace. It has to transform your living experience of that. Now, Once we get through this position of lack of faith, and realizing that our practice does have to be carried out on a day-to-day, moment-to-moment basis, see, then to recognize here and now that you simplify. It is not therapy. You are not here to do a deep psychological analysis of yourself. While that might be fun, it will accomplish nothing. I have sat in this hazy moon and watched people go through the same cycle. And usually the people who do it in this way will drop away from the practice. I can remember watching one person, I'm totally fascinated by this, to watch the person go through this usual cycle. You would see them come in, there would be resentment, bitterness. See? Then you'd watch the face become sort of sullen. And then you would watch this almost state of grace as they started to become a victim. And they loved it. Their face would get red, sort of puffy. And then the tears would come. See? Oh, and I used to think, my God, isn't that story boring? How many times, and just happens this one, infinite number of times that we have gone through it. Now, for those of you who have a tendency to want to hang up on your past, you want to remember how your folks gypped you when you were a kid, let me point out to you that to be working on a five-year-old problem when you're 30, 40, or 50 is not healthy. See, you cannot relate to what it is to be a five-year-old. You can only relate to the eternal now. And might I point out that you are not remembering an actual incident. Think of this. You are remembering your memory of a memory of a memory of a memory all the way back. Now you know that you throw in little adjustments along the way, don't you? Because after a while, we know in the field of behavior that I worked in, see, we can desensitize you. And if you run the story long enough, you get bored, don't you? Think about it. Well, it's just not enough, that story. So I got to put in a couple of extra hooks. Let's make the poor folks a little more vicious, a little more that, a little less concerned. And let's make me just a little bit nicer and gentler and very attractive so when people see this little flower being stomped on. Then we put another little... You're living in a fantasy world. Do you see that? I am not exaggerating. And this is one of the things that I appreciate that you saw. See, that we walk around in a world making up stories about what we think everybody is doing. Now, if you get clear at all, you should see the beauty of this. Everybody else is doing the same thing. See, we're all walking around in a fantasy. Now, some of you started to... Now, drop right down to here. Stay awake now, here. Stay in this place, in this non-distracted awareness. And stay here continuously. Now, don't make the mistake of all of a sudden turning this into a conceptual understanding. See, I've got it now, I understand. No, no. Once we see this path, then be like a bloodhound, see, on the trail. Put your nose to it and don't raise up until you crack through the shell of ignorance. There is Kensho. Buddha Dharma is founded on Kensho. You know, some of you may or may not know, but when Doman was down with Dr. Cook, Cook showed him told him about an article that a lady had written stating that none of the teachers in America believe in Kensho or enlightenment. Well, you get a lot of social action, see. There's no true social action other than what we are doing here. But what are they teaching? How can they call themselves Buddhists? It's founded upon the enlightenment experience of the Buddha. And so I have said, I have said long time, see, I'm so sorry for those places that practice where there is no enlightenment. But I'm so eternally grateful that my teacher showed me this place of enlightenment. This place now is called the hazy moon. And here, there is enlightenment. Here, there is the actualization of the way. And this is the whole point. See, the whole function, the whole reason for being of a hazy moon practitioner, see, is this great realization that transforms your very life. Literally, to transcend birth and death. We have to see what that means. See, you have to really, truly poke through the shell of delusion to see what you truly are. Don't get lost in the words. See, don't get lost formulating concepts of how it is. See, again, I come back into this, see, this place of not knowing does not mean uncertainty. Like some teachers are saying, let me fall back into this uncertain place that I don't know what's going to happen. That's not Buddha Dharma, that's delusion. When we talk about this place of not knowing, it means absolute certainty. The one old song master said, the place of not knowing means to know everything perfectly. Big difference. One is enlightened, the other isn't. That's what you're working on. It will transform you. Drop all of your expectations. Take the backward step. Give up. You don't know at this point what you are. Maizumi Roshi would say that. It's simply you and your life. And then as sort of a second thought, a little lower, he'd say, but do you really know what you are? See, don't make the mistake of how you think you are and being trapped there. That's what we're doing here. That's what I'm encouraging you to do here. Take these few steps that I've outlined, and then for the rest of this session, apply yourself with 110% effort. If it's counting, count. Count. When you break, count. Count. When you eat, count. Count. When you sleep, count. Count. If it's koan, if it's muji, never allow muji to slip away from you. Allow muji to settle deep. See? And continuously keep focused on it. And then take care of what else we have to do. Becomes so much simpler. So long as you try to produce something, so long as you think there is something that you have to do, you stay caught, see, in the realm of delusion. One of the definitions of a Buddha is the one who does nothing. Now, don't again. Don't make the mistake of misunderstanding. It does not mean to curl up in the prenatal position and stick your thumb in your mouth. That's how some people do. No, 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 no. It is the most proactive way that you can exist. Let it drop away. All of the clinging, all of the grasping, all of the rejecting. Look out here. See? And experience the freedom to move, see, without any expectation. You are perfect as you are. And don't define perfect in sort of a rigid ethical sense. That will always produce an inquisition. Be absolutely fluid to the moment. And then, with selfless compassion, which is the very basic ground of this true mind, of this Buddha nature, compassion, it is not Nyogen's idea of compassion, but it is the compassion of seeing what needs to be done to maintain this in the state of harmony and balance. And there you find liberation. There you can save those who are hurt and suffering. And this is the great path of the Buddha. And this is the path of those, the hazy moon. Thank you.